all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back to Up North News Radio, unabashedly Wisconsin and brought to you by Courier Newsroom, carried by our friends here on the Civic Media Radio Network, live from Chippewa Falls. Nice to have you along at 7:06 on this Tuesday morning, August 13th, coming up this hour. If Donald Trump becomes president again, Wisconsin farmers will have to brace for another trade war with China, probably another one with our allies as well. Trump loves to threaten and impose tariffs, making them sound like some kind of punishment on other countries. But the real impact is a price hike on American consumers and a loss of markets for American farmers. We'll talk to Hans Breitenmoser about the harm done by Trump in his last term to Wisconsin agriculture, and we'll talk a bit about Farm Technology Days. Opening up today, this year's edition is right here in Chippewa County near Cadott, so that's coming up. Chad Holmes will be along as well, and you can join us at 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-75-CIVIC, or put a comment on social media like Rob does every morning. Good morning from Tigerton. It's sunny with light fog, 56 degrees. We had a quarter inch of rain from a thunderstorm around 7 last night. I saw something weird Monday. A car parked in the middle of the road near my house. Someone operating a lawn tractor on the shoulder along I-39 Highway 51 south of Highway 29, and a deputy was with him. Dan Fogelberg's Hard to Say was a top 10 song from January of 1982. Rob, thank you for all that from Tigerton. It helps us welcome in meteorologist Brittany Merlot. And yeah, Brittany, was a beautiful evening here on Lake Wissota, but when I looked at the radar at one point, I noticed that there was this line of scattered but definitely thunderstorms that were happening in parts of north central, maybe down to central Wisconsin. So we definitely get the mixed bag of weather for August, don't we?
Yeah, we sure do. And that was an interesting line, too. It lined up from pretty much Superior all the way to Sheboygan. And you could see those showers and storms putting down anywhere from a trace to a half an inch of rain. So that's, again, the case this evening. We are going to see some showers and storms sparking up somewhere. I am thinking it's going to be moving a little bit more south. So instead of lining up towards Sheboygan, maybe more towards Milwaukee. So keep that in mind. Nothing will be severe, though, today. It's just some heavier rain there at times. Otherwise, sunny and summery. We're going to be back into those low 80s. And I got to thinking, these are going to be the last few 80s that we're going to be seeing. I'm not saying the last, but if you look ahead at the temperatures, we are dropping as soon as that rain hits on Thursday and into next week as well. I don't see any 80s. So keep that in mind. Soak it up.
Yikes. So we no longer have sunsets after 8, and we may not have temperatures that start with 8 for a little bit here. This is happening really quickly. I don't like this.
I agree.
I mean,
Are you okay, Pat? Are you okay?
Well, it's not like we can do anything about it. It just kind of caught me off guard when you said, you know, that we may not get a ton of 80s, but that is the kind of summer it's been, you know, again, compared to how hot and dry it was last time around. All right. Well, Brittany, thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
You as well. Thanks.
So we've got this comment on the text line that I want to follow up on right after the weather report here. And there was no name left on the text, but it was somebody listening on WFHR in the Wisconsin Rapids area. And it says, as Hurricane Debbie ravages the South, now would be a good time to remind folks that Project 2025 will eliminate certain aid for families and businesses to rebuild after storms. It's on page 750. And then the person passes along on the text line, is this factual? And if so, discuss. Well, I'm nothing if not game for a little improv here. So I quickly looked during the news break at Project 2025, which is the roadmap for a second Trump term that was put together by dozens of conservative to far right groups. And sure enough, Project 2025 proposes on page 750, quote, an end to direct lending to the Small Business Administration, the only instance of which would be the disaster loan program. Project 2025 suggests privatization as one potential solution and claims without evidence that loan availability reduces individuals' incentives to purchase disaster-related insurance. But the document, according to the Center for American Progress, makes no mention of the skyrocketing cost for families in these situations. I mean, here we go again. This whole notion of any kind of assistance that we give each other, by the way, that we give each other. It's not government disincentivizing you if a tornado takes out your home. It's human compassion. We all pay in taxes. Some of that tax money does help somebody devastated by a hurricane, because next time around, we might be the one devastated by a tornado, or somebody else is devastated by a forest fire. And one of the things that can be done is, you know, rather than, you know, I'm from the government, here's a check, is no, instead of doing that, it's look, here are loans that you can get through, for example, the Small Business Administration, lower interest loans that that you can pay back so that you can rebuild. But what we always get throughout this Project 2025 and whatever you get at the far right end of the spectrum is this note of privatization, that government assistance is making you dependent. And so if you have to go only through corporations, if you only have to go through private banks, if you only would buy more insurance, well, then you'll be taken care of because, you know, your insurance company has never hosed you, has it? Oh, wait. Yes, it has. Yeah, there's nothing but instances where you've paid your premiums. You've paid them on time for years and years. And whether it's health care or something for your house or something for your car, you get hosed. And either you or your doctor or a home contractor has to get on the phone and plead a case that shouldn't be a case at all. Whereas when you the way that you can do it through something like the Small Business Administration is you have much less red tape. Do you have fraud? Do you have abuse? Yes, you always will. That's human nature. There's going to be some goofballs out there. And then you go crack down on them. You don't throw the baby out with the bathwater and say, well, we're just not going to help anybody anytime anymore because, you know, that just reduces the incentive for personal responsibility. But as noted here, they don't tell you that from 2021 to 2023, home insurance rates rose nearly 20% nationally. And if there's one thing the Biden-Harris administration is going to be known for when all of this is said and done, it's the way they went after corporations that were gouging consumers and saying, well, that's just inflation. What are you going to do? Well, there is inflation when there are things like disruptions to the supply chains. But to then use that as an excuse to then gouge consumers, either through artificially inflating prices or maybe shrinkflation, which is where you charge the same price, but there's less in the package that you're getting at the grocery store, or all those ticky-tack fees that get added on when you're buying concert tickets or seats on an airplane. This administration will go down in the history books as the most aggressive of our lifetimes in turning to corporate America and saying, hey, there's no problem with profit. We got a problem with gouging. And you're gouging consumers and nobody has stopped you. And it is time for that gravy boat to end. And somebody's doing that. Did I just confuse a gravy boat with a gravy train? Yes, I did. But I think you understood where I was going with that, Greg. But, I mean, it's gravy.
I mean, either way, I want mashed potatoes now.
I know. So,
but I want a gravy train because clearly I think a gravy train would have more gravy. A gravy boat. If it was a gravy yacht, then yes, more of a gravy yacht. But
yeah, not a gravy yacht. You could play yacht rock.
Exactly.
There you go.
Hang on.
And that's just a little gravy onto the whole conversation here. So thank you to the person who texted in and asked about Project 2025, because again, in a document that massive, I mean, we really could pluck something every day out of there. And I almost prefer that people are looking at other news stories or hearing things and just kind of throwing things at us. Again, it's almost like news improv. Like, hey, here's page four. My birthday is on, you know, August 23rd. So that's 823. Page 823, go.
Yeah.
And we just would open it up and go, oh yeah, they want to kill school lunches. Okay, it's all in there. Because they put it in writing.
Yeah. Well, that's actually page 303. I remember that from yesterday's conversation.
Oh, with, very good.
Selena Heller. And I asked specifically for that page because that's the thing is, Jane and I started talking about Project 2025 in a macro sense months ago. And now that people are talking about it in the mainstream media and really getting out there, now they're starting to get to the micro, we're getting to the pages, we're talking about specific things in there. And I think that's even more, that I think that's as important because you could talk about Project 2025 as an entity, but then people get bored with it. But if you talk about what's in there now and people are sending page numbers, that's what can also hold their interest.
Oh, yeah. And I know that the original thinking had to be something like, well, if we just throw everything, if we throw the kitchen sink in this, it'll be so much that folks will just be overwhelmed and they won't even want to talk about it. And they'll just kind of wave it off like, oh, that's just so much. They didn't think that actually people would pay attention enough to say, what's on this page right here again?
Yeah.
What is it you want to do? Yeah. I don't think that's a good idea.
You don't have to read the entire thing, but if you read 20, 30 pages, I think it's enough to get you fired up. And then you might read 20, 30 pages more and so on and so forth. But yeah, their underestimation of the people's ability to read is fantastic.
Yep. And you know who's reading and paying attention? Alice from Cudahy, who texted back and said she's the one that sent it. Alice, thank you for that. We appreciate that so much. Yeah. All right. Let's do a little sports. It's 7:17 now. A big four-game series with the Brewers, with the LA Dodgers is underway, and it didn't start on a great note here with the Dodgers getting home runs from Mookie Betts, who's back in the lineup, and Shohei Ohtani, and Clayton Kershaw finally got his first win of the season, and the Dodgers beat the Brewers 5-2 last night. Three more games left in the series between the Western Division and Central Division leaders, and they will do it again at 7:10 this evening. The pregame will be at 6:35 on Civic Media Stations WRCE in Richland Center, WRJN in Racine, Kenosha, WCQM in Park Falls, WISS in Oshkosh. Coming up, we'll talk a bit about the, we're not going to call it an interview, the discussion on what used to be Twitter between Elon Musk and former President Trump, and more of the ridiculousness. Some of it's in Project 2025. Some of it is just stuff that pours out of Donald Trump's mouth, and we'll talk a bit about that. Still ahead, Hans Breitenmoser and Chad Holmes on Up North News Radio on this Tuesday morning, the 13th of August. We will be back here live from Lake Wissota in just a bit. The Beatles' Help album was released this day in 1965. Ticket to Ride included on there as well. Election day is today. MyVote.wi.gov is the place to go to find out where to vote, what's on your ballot, how to get registered, what forms of ID you need, what form of proof of residence do you need if you're going to register at the polls. And Wisconsin is still one of those states where you can register to vote on election day. Go there and do it. Wisconsin legislative Republicans are trying to sneak through a couple of issues that would amend the Constitution and make it easier for them to bottle up federal funding. Right now, they're bottling up all kinds of state funds that should be used for things like cleaning up water contaminated with industrial PFAS chemicals. But because Republicans are trying to essentially blackmail the governor into protecting the original corporate polluters, they still haven't released the money. They'd rather keep Wisconsin water contaminated with PFAS to play politics rather than hold polluters accountable. If these constitutional amendments were to pass, they could do to federal dollars what they're doing to state dollars, play politics with them and hold up the aid until they get their political aims. So to learn more about what's on the ballot, go to myvote.wi.gov. Polls are open now. They close at 8 p.m. And at 8 p.m., as soon as they close, your favorite Civic Media station will have primary coverage that you won't hear anywhere else. The Civic Media News team, anchored by Terry Bell, will take you around the state for coverage of the constitutional ballot questions, the contested congressional races, some updates on the U.S. Senate race, and legislative primaries. So be a voter. Vote between now and 8 p.m. and then tune in at 8 p.m. across the Civic Media Radio Network for election results. And we'll talk more about them, of course, tomorrow here on Up North News Radio. So last night, Donald Trump was back on Twitter. Recall that he was booted off Twitter in the wake of January 6th. You know, when he tried to overthrow the government, when he tried to stage a coup, when he tried to overturn an American election. The man should be a pariah right now and not enjoying nearly 50% support in this country. It is testimony to the tenaciousness, not only of him, but the entire right-wing political apparatus, that they have been able to somehow make Donald Trump out to be the victim in all of this rather than the instigator. And that effort continued again last night in Trump's return to Twitter, now known as X, after being purchased by immigrant billionaire Elon Musk, who allowed Trump to bash immigrants and lift up billionaires throughout the 2 hours that he spoke. Well, once all of the technical glitches were somewhat worked out, so that this audio interview on what's called Spaces, their audio channel, could be played. Trump needed a friendly forum. Keep in mind his last couple of attempts to answer questions didn't go so well. He was very frustrated by the questions that were asked by reporters at a news conference last week at his Mar-a-Lago compound. And recall that shortly before that, he visited the National Association of Black Journalists convention. That did not go over very well. So because he could not answer pointed, direct, probing questions that demanded factual answers, he decided to link up with Elon Musk and have this conversation instead, where, again, for more than 2 hours, Trump spewed out the usual attacks, the usual lies. The two of them guffawed about firing workers when they were trying to organize. He attacked Vice President Kamala Harris for failure to address border concerns, said the guy who tanked the bipartisan border bill. He continued to tell lies about the 2020 election being rigged. He continued to lie about the criminal cases against him, saying that they were a conspiracy by the Bush administration rather than him, you know, breaking the law. He tried out a new line of attack on immigrants, you know, specifically non-white immigrants, saying that Central American countries weren't only sending their criminals, but also, quote, their non-productive people to America. That was his new term. They're sending their non-productive people. And this, of course, is in the Eric Hovde, Tim Michaels Republican vein of, you know, there's just too many people who are couch surfing. There are too many people who aren't working. When we are at record high employment rates in this country, and when most of the jobs that you won't do and that I wouldn't want to do, whether it's cleaning the muck out of dairy barns, whether it's cleaning up all of our hotel rooms, scraping the plates, and serving food at restaurants, you know who's doing that? You know, those people that Trump was calling non-productive people, immigrants. They get the job done. He continued to attack the vice president for not holding a formal news conference and avoiding interviews with journalists, even though just the other day she walked right up to a pack of journalists and said, "What do you got?" And what did they ask her? Question after question after question after question was about Trump. So where's the incentive to actually answer questions if the questions being asked are about the horse race rather than the issues that would help Americans? He played up his willingness to take questions. Well, yeah, he takes them, but then he doesn't answer them. He just uses that as a launch pad to do the next bit of shtick from his stump speech. And so it was all responded by a Harris campaign spokesperson, Joe Costello, who mocked the technical issues and criticized the views of Trump and Musk. Costello's statement said, quote, Trump's entire campaign is in service of people like Elon Musk and himself. Self-obsessed rich guys who will sell out the middle class and yet cannot run a live stream in the year 2024, said the statement. And so that's where we stand with the presidential campaign this week, with Trump still not holding rallies in swing states. He had one in Montana that had some kind of glitch where his plane actually landed in Billings and he drove to Bozeman. I don't know if that's because, you know, he still owes Bozeman money. He owes a lot of cities a lot of money for his rallies, where he has stiffed those cities. He's never paid the bill that campaigns traditionally pay for the extra police and security services. But one rally in Montana and no rallies this week in any kind of swing states. Very low energy, one would say. Whereas Kamala Harris is with President Biden this week, attending to some official duties, and Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, Kamala Harris's running mate, is on a campaign and fundraising tour around the country throughout the coming week. Well, but we will look for any new events that pop up and pass those along to you. But in the meantime, we get back to the business here of what does the election mean for you and me? And what does the election mean for farmers in Wisconsin? We're going to talk to Hans Breitenmoser about that next, about how Trump's trade wars are not great for farmers. They're not great for consumers. They make him look tough, but we all pay the price instead. That's coming up after the Midwest Farm Report. We'll talk about Farm Technology Days as well next here up north.
He had hard work caked on his overalls, sweat on his neck, chow in his jaw, when a stranger pulled up and met him outside his barn.
Back now on this Tuesday morning, August 13th, this is Up North News Radio. Hans Breitenmoser joins us every couple weeks or so to tell us what's happening up in Lincoln County, where he's one very busy dairy farmer, and he's more than a little busy with hay, alfalfa? What are we working on up there these days?
We are chopping third crop.
Chopping third crop, are you? Okay. Yep. That is awesome. I was just looking at every Monday afternoon, we get the latest crop report from the USDA here, and it says production for alfalfa and alfalfa mixtures of hay forecast for just about 2.5 million tons, up 44% from the previous year, which I suppose makes sense given how dry things were last year. So is this typical for a third cutting for you at this time of year?
I'd say we're about a week behind schedule because we got our first crop in late, and mm-hmm. that sort of set the schedule for the rest of the crops. But the good news is the third crop yield is looking pretty nice, and so we're pretty happy with that.
Good. Well, here are the new crop estimates, and then that's going to take us into our discussion about tariffs and trade markets and things like that. Although I'll tell you what, before I get to the crops and the tariffs, I don't want to neglect that Farm Technology Days is going on this week, starting today on the Hilger Brothers Farm near Cadott. Yeah, I was going to say it says near Bloomer here, but no, it's closer to Cadott. It's Jamie and Renee Close will be hosting. It's right near the Rockfest grounds, if folks are familiar with that, north of Cadott, where, Hans, you're going this week, and I'm sure you're a veteran of Farm Technology Days. What kinds of things will folks be able to see?
Oh, well, I think all manner of technology, as the name of the event would suggest. It's always fun to walk through all the vendors and see all the different equipment and so forth. And then there's usually field demonstrations and so on as well. So there's just a lot of things to see. And it tends to be a pretty festive atmosphere as well to just see. Sometimes, you know, you bump into farmers that don't live very close to you, and you can sort of bump into them once a year type of thing, too. So it's just a good time all the way around.
Yeah, they're estimating about 30,000 in attendance from about 500 exhibitors. A portion of the proceeds, according to the Wisconsin State Farmer newspaper, a portion of the proceeds will go directly to the Chippewa County Agricultural Advancement Fund, which supports ag-related scholarships, programs, and initiatives to help cultivate the next generation of agricultural leaders and innovators. And having attended a couple of these myself, couple of observations. One is that, yes, it is nice to see that, you know, there is, for all the reduction in farming, it's always nice to see the next generation coming along and seeing the things that have the potential to make their lives easier than prior generations. Although I got to admit, there's a pretty hefty price tag on some of the nice stuff that people can see out there this week.
Yeah, that's for sure. Prices of equipment and technology obviously continue to rise like everything else. So it's always that trade-off and the decisions farmers have to make with the regard to, okay, is this a labor-saving thing? And if it is, am I, you know, what's the capital that I'm willing to lay out, you know, for that? So it's like a lot of businesses have to make those decisions as well.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Tony writes in from Ashland, typical farmer running behind, so lazy, doing his best Eric Hovde impression. And I, by the way, just an aside for me, I love that Hovde's now doing this commercial saying, you know, Tammy Baldwin's lying about me and the things that I said. We're playing back your own words. Your own words said that, you know, farmers now basically just ride around on a tractor all day. So I'm sure that will be one of many topics of discussion. Oh, and the other thing I was going to say about Farm Technology Days, not just the young, you know, that there's a new generation of farmers and ag producers there. But even if you're not a farmer, if you are, it's basically like walking around a Home Depot or a Lowe's or whatever, you're going to get some ideas there for your house and go, okay, obviously don't need something that big, but you see these ideas and you go, oh, I'd like one of those, you know.
Absolutely.
Whether it's—
No, I would really, really strongly encourage all of your listeners who are non-farmers, go to Farm Tech Days. It's a great way to spend a day. I mean, there's some great food, and you'll get a better sense and appreciation for what's all going on in ag. And I think it would be fascinating for a lot of people who even aren't necessarily close to ag.
Yeah, I highly recommend it as well. I think you will get something out of it. All right, now to the latest. This is the crop production estimate from the USDA for the state of Wisconsin. Wisconsin corn production is forecast at 538 million bushels. That's down 3% from last year. Soybean production, 110 million bushels, up 7% from last year. Winter wheat production, 15 million bushels, down 13% from the previous year. Oats, 5 million bushels, up 10% from the previous year. Millions upon millions, hundreds of millions of bushels. When we talk about Wisconsin feeding the world, and we talk about the American farmer feeding the world, that's no lie. Those are the numbers just from Wisconsin to back it up, but it doesn't happen automatically. There are transactions that take place with other countries, but if you're having a trade war between them, that can be a very bad thing. Now, there are times when trade disputes are real, when trade negotiations are necessary, but Hans, it certainly seemed during the last Trump administration that rather than negotiating, it was going right to DEFCON 1 and slapping on tariffs, and a whole lot of those millions of bushels did not get to some of their intended destinations.
Yeah, and what good did it do us? And, you know, the other thing, I mean, you spoke about all the obvious ones and the big ones, but one of the big ones that impacts us here in our neck of the wood is ginseng. And, it, you know, those tariffs effectively cut the price of ginseng in half. So that's a really big deal for our economy. So, yeah, I mean, getting into trade wars, I would tend to agree with you, Pat, that there are times when we have to negotiate and obviously we should always be looking out for our own interests. But, you know, relationships between nations and so forth are, I think, very similar to relationships between, you know, rural neighbors. You we need to have outcomes that are good for everybody in order for the relationship to be sustainable and the business to be done right. And so when you get involved in a trade war, you better know, you know, what the hell you're doing, because otherwise it can end poorly. And, you know, the other thing that was touted at the time was that we were trying to be more hard-nosed about manufacturing. And, you know, I get that to a point, but what's interesting too is, you know, on the Republican side, you know, hard-nosed for manufacturing to what end? If it's all going to the, you know, the top couple percent, and it's not necessarily going to improve wages at the, you know, at the factory floor, then again, what was gained by real people? And when we're talking public policy, we should be worried about, you know, people close to the ground and not multinational corporations that might be doing better because they've got a more competitive situation because of tariffs.
Yeah. So when we say that we're putting a tariff in place, when Trump talks about tariffs, and not just about you know, crops and commodities, but he talks about it in terms of, you know, cars that are built in Mexico and then come across the border, that he wants to slap, you know, 100% tariff on those. And I think that when you slap that tariff on, that extra fee, and Trump likes to frame it as we're punishing Mexico, we're punishing China, but the real punishment is the American consumer, who still has a demand, still wants to buy products, and now is paying essentially a tax increase so that Trump can look tough.
Well, exactly. And, you know, getting back to the world of ag, you know, I feel like we're getting it from both ends, because we're inhibited from being competitive in the export market, and that will, you know, obviously Brazil knows how to grow soybeans as well, right? So we're getting kind of screwed on that end. But when, again, you go to that Farm Tech Days and you see that shiny new tractor that was made in, you know, Europe or Mexico or all the different places, well, guess who's going to be paying more for that tractor as well?
Absolutely. And there's also the fact that you'll now see retaliatory tariffs. And so if we put something on their products, then other countries will slap tariffs on our products. And then again, that reduces the amount of you know, sales that can be done for American consumers, not just in ag, but in other industries that get caught up in all of this. When it works right. And in 2023, for the last year that numbers are available, Wisconsin exported nearly $4 billion in agricultural and food products. Okay, so that's $4 billion coming into the Wisconsin economy. And while there have always been efforts at the state government level to look for new markets, and it's always a good idea to be looking for new markets, there, like you said, there are plenty of other markets. If China doesn't get their soybeans from Wisconsin, then they will get it from Brazil or other markets. We're not the only ones looking for new markets. And it just, again, makes it that much more important that you negotiate in good faith and try to get the best deal you can and not blow up a deal just for political expediency. Oh, wait, Hans, I feel like I just described the border security bill rather than trade it. You know what? I think this guy Trump has a pattern.
Yeah, I think it's called poor management.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of these things don't make any sense at all. And as I stated earlier, I think it's important that we negotiate so that we've got good trade deals that work for us, but also work for our trading partners. And I think what's lost in all of this too is our ability or our, you know, we should be looking also towards saying, how can we leverage our trading impact to do good in the world? You know, this is sort of that soft power that we can say to our trade partners, hey, you need to do a better job with your environmental regulations and your labor regulations and so forth, and move that needle in that direction while still doing good business. To me, makes more sense than just having this big hammer and making our trade situation just an extension of some, you know, nonsense personal, I'm bigger than you type of deal.
Right. And it's not just the talking tough on tariffs, but also the, you know, the again, so-called tough talk on immigration. And again, Trump continues to say there should be mass deportations. I can scarcely imagine what the Wisconsin rural economy would look like if there was both a trade war and a massive crackdown on migrant labor, whether this state's economy could even handle that kind of a blow.
Well, again, it's this willful ignorance amongst politicians and you know, some of our rural neighbors that just say, boy, we should get all the people that weren't born in this country, we should kick them all out. Guess what? The economy just doesn't work very well if a lot of these folks leave. I mean, again, I can only speak to the ag sector with any sort of intelligence, but I can tell you that ag relies on foreign-born workers. It just does. And if you are nostalgic about the old days where that wasn't the case, well, good for you, but you can't unring that bell. Our current situation has us relying on foreign-born employees. That's a fact.
Yeah, and in fact, the Associated Press quotes an analysis by the Peterson Institute of International Economics that says they picked the number 1.3 million workers. If you deported 1.3 million workers, it would cause the size of the U.S. economy to shrink by 2%, which would essentially create a recession. So, I mean, Donald Trump is essentially promising a recession with what he plans to do with tariffs and with immigration, rather than, again, like the border security bill and like trade negotiations, try to manage the best deal possible. Hans, thanks for helping us provide some background on the issue. Safe travels. Have a great time at Farm Technology Days, and we'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks.
Thanks a lot, Pat. Take care.
All right. Chad Holmes is coming up next. You're up north. Welcome back. It's 7:50 and time to visit with Chad Holmes to find out what's coming up next on his show on Bull Falls Radio in the Wausau area. If you're not in the Wausau area, you can catch the show through the Civic Media app. Go over to civicmedia.us to learn more about getting the app or listening to Chad's show there or subscribing by podcast. Mr. Holmes, how are you?
Doing very well. How are you guys doing?
We're doing good, doing good. We just finished that conversation with Hans Breitenmoser, and he pointed out not just the usual suspects when it comes to a trade war impact on Wisconsin crops, but of course, you know, ginseng as well. And I mean, the 90% of the U.S. production of ginseng comes from Marathon County. And so any kind of a trade war with China that isn't born out of good faith negotiating, that just has to hit your backyard especially hard.
Absolutely. And again, I think you kind of hit it on the head with in the discussion just generally about what Trump tries to accomplish. Frank, I just got done finishing a book about the history of the American Whig Party. And one of the big policy points that the Whigs had in the 19th century, that was Henry Clay and the American system, was tariffs. But back then, it was about building American business, building or protecting American farmers against especially like hemp or anything like that that came from Europe. There's no intellectual thought in what Trump is trying to accomplish here.
Well, no, because back then we were a developing country.
Exactly.
We were what you would call a third world country back then. You know, so that you can't use that.
He's got this mentality. Again, he has no understanding. I don't know if it was on your program or some other program that's talking about the man has no intellectual curiosity. I don't think that he studies any of this. Mm-hmm. It's all about how can I use it politically. And another point that you made early in the show that I just wish that seemed to get more appreciation is the regulatory watchdog that the Biden administration has been. That I heard a Republican in Congress say that, Americans actually like having these junk fees be really high to protect people. I mean,
what?
I got to go back because I was listening to you and I got to go back and find that out. There was a hearing on Capitol Hill where one of the Republicans said, no. The American people actually like having these fees. There's sort of a level of protection there. But no, it's just you were hit it on the head. I just wish people had a greater appreciation that, yeah, it may be in the big picture, it's not a multi-billion dollar program, but in the end, it actually does turn into that. But just saving that money for people that are a little bit late on a credit card payment, where you, instead of getting your arm knocked off, the fee is kept to a very minimum amount, because again, these institutions use this as profit making, right. And it's just wrong on every level. And yet I don't think people appreciate the protection that an administration like Joe Biden's can give to the American public.
Yeah. It is about you can do so much with those little things that add up when you're going after fees, when you're going after the things that other people have been just kind of taking for granted, you know, year after year after year. And what Democrats are finally doing is they're making clear, hey, we are pro capitalism. Capitalism only works, however, when there are guardrails to keep consumers from, you know, from getting cheated. We are for patriotism, but patriotism does not mean that you hate everybody who doesn't think like you or who isn't an American. Democrats for the longest time just kind of shrugged these things off like, oh, we're patriotic. That's just silly. Well, now it actually has stuck. And because it has stuck, Democrats have finally been fighting back to say, we're actually the ones being patriotic. We're actually the ones taking care of small businesses, fighting for a level playing field. We're the ones keeping big multinational businesses who don't care necessarily about America from screwing over Americans. It's a change in practice that is long overdue for that party, a generational change. And I think you're seeing that reflected in this renewed support now that Kamala Harris is at the top of the ticket.
I agree 100%. And the hijacking of the term patriot has been something that you shake your head at. Have you ever heard the term Christian patriotism?
Christian patriotism, Christian nationalism.
Well, I mean, I had not heard it that way because I had a guest on. I bring on a guest once in a while who's a conservative, who just to sort of get outside the bubble here a little bit. And we were having the discussion last week, and to mention Christian nationalism, he said they also call themselves Christian patriots. And I just wanted to bang my head against the wall. I mean, anybody can use the term patriot any way they want to. And Democrats have kind of left the field open for way too long on that. It's time to battle for that, to show that beyond the words, there are policies behind it. I think that's what is just as important, not just going out there and saying, hey, we're big patriots, not being Eric Hovde with USA on my shirt, saying that, you know, America stinks right now, but I'm still a big patriot. No, it's about putting together the idea patriotism equals actual concrete policies that help most of the American people, not the top 2%.
Right. And it's about taking care of each other and not just the ones who go to the same church as you. You know, there should be so much more to that. What do you have happening on the show this week?
Oh, going to be talking a lot about Election Day, making sure everybody gets out there. We have some actually interesting races here in our listing area to keep an eye on. Going to have a candidate for assembly a little bit later on, now that we're past the primary later in the week. We got some, again, see whether or not the Democrats can claw their way back in against some of these Republicans in the state assembly with the new maps, especially here in central Wisconsin and points north. Mm-hmm. So again, and today I have some young thespians on, because there's a Shakespeare in the Park coming here. Hopefully the rain will stay away late in the week, and they have a couple of Shakespeare shows, a local group, and we're going to have a full studio of actors coming up later today.
Oh, very nice. And I'm also encouraged, by the way, Civic Media just minutes ago sent out a text reminding people to vote, that it's Election Day. And of course, we see everything that comes in on the text line here, and the number of people giving like thumbs up emojis or saying I'll be voting or I'll already vote just makes us feel like, you know, we've done a good thing, reminding people to show up today. Polls are open until 8 p.m. Chad Holmes, thanks so much. We'll look forward to your show next on Bull Falls Radio. Good to see you. Greg Bach back for Matt and Air on Air.
Yes, indeed.
I was going to say goodnight, Greg. No, say goodbye, Greg.
Goodbye, Greg.
Goodbye, Greg. We'll see you tomorrow morning, and we'll see the rest of you tomorrow as well. Thanks again to Sharita Booker and Christina Laurie and Hans Breitenmoser for being here this morning. Up North News is the Wisconsin outlet for Courier, a pro-democracy news network building a more informed, engaged, and representative America. Enjoy your Tuesday. We'll see you tomorrow morning up north.